There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question, kiss my...
Although it, in some states he could be and not be violating the law. All right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig in here with me. You on the phones at 343-0106 and on the text line. We'll go to the phones in a second. I want to read one text here from Travis. And Travis, your lament is what has gotten me on this multi-year... Gosh, I've been doing this... 5, 6, 7 years been talking about this on the show. Travis says, Sean, I'm not quite understanding federal law versus state law. I know that federal law is the law of the land, but if pot is not legal because it's a, because it is federal law, then how the heck are some states able to make it legal? Let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's say the feds pass a law banning firearms. I guess all the state needs to do is say no to the federal law and say we won't recognize that and we're going to pass our own firearms law. It all boils down to the desire to enforce said law. It's like we pick and choose what laws we will follow or not. So what good is the legislative branch of the government? Travis, well said. That has been my lament the whole time. Is... And the problem is, it's like this is like gambling. It's like any of these things that are vices. The whole conversation gets locked up with the thing, the drug or the behavior and all those things. Hey, and rightfully so. I'm nowhere in these arguments have I said this is a good thing. I'm not one of these people. Now, I do believe in cannabinoid oil that like they developed UAB. I've seen what happened here in Alabama with children with epilepsy and what happened. And I will punt somebody who wants to prevent that drug from being used for children. But beyond that, when you get into recreational marijuana, it's not a good thing, but it's a question of liberty of states, liberty of individuals, and a law that's contrary at a state level to a federal law. And we've seen, like people said on the text line in the past, and I mentioned earlier, what it looks like when you buck the feds on the supremacy clause. Except in this case, do whatever you want. All right. Let's go to Mike in Fairhope. Hey, Mike.
What is going on? All right, so here we go down the rabbit hole.
Okay.
The real, you know, one of the real issues that pops up is the disruption to other industries. And this is one of the things when you hear people talk, oh, it does everything. Well, it, you know, if they legalize it in that sense, then they have to also look at the garment industry because hemp makes a great fiber. The paper industry, hemp makes great paper at lower cost. And then you're up against the pharmaceutical industry as far as the antidepressant, you know, pills. First-hand knowledge of friends that, you know, have to or were supposedly supposed to take these crazy medications that where marijuana does better for them. And you see it with the soldiers with PTSD, and they don't want the psychotics. They just give me the weed. I know what it's going to do. So you really, when they're going for this legislation, don't be surprised if you have all these industries that have been paying all these senators that are going to jump out at it and fight it. Because really, when you just like you just said, you know, the oil, I know somebody firsthand, once again, with that, with the epilepsy. And this is a five-year-old girl that they were putting on this medication that was having such horrible side effects that the side effects were worse than the actual seizures that this little girl was having. I think you're going to have the lobbyists and the industries come out against it, and that's going to sway the votes. I mean, we will find out whether or not we do have any kind of, you know, representation on that. If you're saying 60% of America wants this, well, you know, I would guarantee that we're not going to get 60% of Congress to vote for it? Is it too much money and keeping it illegal?
I don't know, Mike, because the other side of this that's bringing this conversation up is that we'll call them big weed, like big pharma, but let's say junior
Bonner.
Big weed.
You know, Bonner is a lobbyist now for a big company.
Well, yeah. So John Boehner. Yeah, John Boehner is in.
Yeah.
And on both sides of the aisle, they have Republicans and Democrats lobbying. So it may balance out or somewhat mute the effects of the money on one side because you'll have it on both sides. But I get down to it. I look at this academically. Like I said, I'm not even, we could call it widgets and not marijuana. The question is, if you're going to have a federal law that says something is against the law and have states openly opposing it, I question it just based on the rule of law. Then they either Congress
really crazy since I am being an honest. Hopefully nobody recognizes my voice. From past experience, they passed the marijuana tax stamp law in 1976. One guy was arrested for it when he actually tried to go pay for his that. Now, firsthand experience is that you will get charged if you get caught growing in a state that where it's not legal. They will still try to charge you with that felony for not paying taxes on it, even though there's nowhere that you can't. And I've seen jurors just raise their hand and be like, well, hold on a second. How can you pay a tax stamp on this if it's illegal, but you're still charging them with it?
But they're collecting the money out of Colorado. The nine states legalized, in the story I was reading in USA Today, they're collecting money.
Oh, it's flush, man. Colorado.
But the feds are, too.
They have to spend it all. That's part of their that's part of their thing. And they're running out of things to spend it on. They're like, we've got parks, we've got senior centers, we've got everything. Look at what it does. And then if you're going to say that, it shouldn't be, like from your point of view, and I'm a hypocrite. I don't think it should be illegal, but I think it should be decriminalized. I don't really know where that falls. But if the federal government's going to say that, well, no, you can only drink alcohol, which causes untold amount of damages with drunk driving,
don't disagree, Mike. But the point is, I'm not hung up in the substances. My point is one of the federal supremacy clause and the rule of law.
Yeah, states' rights.
Yeah,
that's it.
Mike, I appreciate the call, and I hear a lot of stuff you're saying, and this is going to be, I think, a bigger discussion, like you said, with the lobbyists on both sides ramping things up. You have two senators, a Republican and a Democrat. Of course, now Cory Gardner, the Republican behind this, is from Colorado, big pot state. And Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, pot state as well, that are pushing. But I think what they're asking is a fair question. Now, the president said, hey, I'm thinking about signing on to this. But that's a fair question to ask is, if this is going to be something that we're doing in our state, can we remove the federal prohibition on it? Same way Supreme Court moved to change their ruling on sports betting.
And it's interesting. Last week we were trying to figure out, why Trump decided now to mention this. Was it a populist move because so many Americans want marijuana legalized?
Or Dalton's theory. Y'all listen to Dalton's theory.
Or is it a dig at Attorney General Jeff Sessions because he's always been so vocal in his anti-pot? But what Mike just brought up there about hemp, and I think this might be another interesting twist to that, we import $580 million worth of products made from imported hemp every year, from milk to t-shirts to soaps. You know where most of that hemp comes from? Canada, France, China. Those are three of the 30 countries.
Well, we're going to have a tariff on it coming out of Canada.
Exactly. So maybe
Chinese. It's sub-quality. The Chinese hemp. Not as high quality. But by the way, your theory, or at least your question you had asked last week, is the president making this move for the right reasons, or is he doing it as a dig at Attorney General Sessions? Just reinforces what I said a year ago, or whenever confirmation, I said the best thing that could happen for this discussion was Attorney General Jeff Sessions, because he's going to enforce the law, and he's going to make it uncomfortable, and that makes the legislative branch get off their duffs and make a decision. I just want a decision one way or another. I don't care at the end of this which way it goes, but there has to be clarity. It either has to be not illegal from the federal code and allowed in the states, or it has to be illegal, and you need to shut it down everywhere. You cannot have a piecemeal enforcement of laws. That leads to a banana republic. All right, let's go back to the phones, and John Williams, as in the John Williams, joining us. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How are you today?
Good. So is Mobile City Council moving to legalize marijuana?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
as
just checking.
As long as the federal government says we can't override them.
Well, wait, why can't you?
I agree with you. A lot of good points made. during this conversation today. But we can't simply start deciding what laws we're going to follow and which ones we're not.
That's my problem.
There are some things I believe that the federal government ought not mess with. They shouldn't make the law to start with, and it's up to them to get rid of them. But so long as they exist, I think it is my opinion that we need to follow those laws.
And in following those laws, in enforcement of those laws by Jeff Sessions, he has done the best thing for this discussion. For people that are on the pro-legalization side, they should have, instead of excoriate him, instead of denigrating him, they should celebrate him, because his hand here enforcing those laws and doing away with the Cole memo is what is making Congress bring this up. That and some lobbying money.
Well, there's a whole lot of lobbying money going in. And whether or not we're talking about gun laws, or we're talking legalization of marijuana, or immigration, or whatever we're talking about, if there's a federal law on the books, we need to talk to our lawmakers to either take it off and modify it to do something. But if it says this is illegal, we can't make it legal.
Right.
We can't choose to ignore. Now, I think that there can be a level of enforcement. In other words, I only have so many assets. I can only enforce this to this degree and still keep my city safe. But decriminalization's been thrown out there a couple of times. And decriminalization, in a lot of ways, really just makes it legal and gives us an opportunity to say, well, we're really not going to write the ticket today.
It's kicking the can down the road. That's the decriminalization. And Mike was talking about it, but he admitted that it was hypocritical. And I got to tell you, I agree with that. Either you do or you don't. The saying that it's not legal, but it's not a crime. Okay, come on. Either it's not the province of the federal government, it's up to the states, or it's against the law, and they're going to enforce it everywhere in the nation.
Absolutely. I went to a conference just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to get just on marijuana for a second. And that is, I used to believe that you could extract this chemical and without smoking it and getting high, you could give an injection or some type of drop in the under the tongue that would only affect it would give a result. It would stop a certain behavior or would stop a pain or would. But it's not true. Every dosage brings about some type of a level of highness. I don't know how to say that, but there's an intoxication that goes on. I attended this briefing. It was a lady from USC, a PhD, and I thought, oh no, she and I are about to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
She absolutely said without a doubt that there is never a dosage that does not intoxicate in some way.
Well,
wasn't her word exactly, but it. And the more you use it, the less it affects you. Like drinking beer. The more I drink beer, if I drink three or four a week, or if I'm drinking a six pack a week, it seems that if the more I increase it, the less effect I get.
Well, that, I think that's true in anything. But you, well, okay, John. But part of this discussion would be that is if there is a numbing agent or an agent that gives a high present. Sure, I mean people say I have no effect from one beer. I said that's impossible because you wouldn't have effect from 24 beers if you had no effect from one beer. So
that's right.
But in cannabinoid
it's a
oil,
effect, okay. But in this case, they've done studies with this marijuana or with the extract. And give it to kids in some kind of candy or a drop under the tongue, and there is less and less desired result, even though they step up the dosage.
So,
and
but why not use
affect,
it until that point?
It makes them high, it makes them happy, and it makes them less attentive. It makes them now.
Well, her research is contrary to everything I've read.
In all of this, it may be another discussion.
Well, and that's contrary to everything I've read about cannabinoid oil, because they separated, they said, the high from it. It is the, they've taken the THC levels to such a low level. Sure, is there some effect in there? Absolutely. But you know what? If you give a kid an aspirin, there's effect, John, right? I mean,
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The stories here in Alabama.
Aspirin has an intellectual effect. On their on
so
the
should we let them have
it does
should
not
we
have an impact on that intellectual development, and there are extreme cases where we can do this, but I will tell you that I was shocked when University of South Carolina or University of Southern California professor in psychiatrics and psychological development came out with this, and I just blew me away.
Well, let's say there, and I still think we have a little disagreement about the level, but I will read up on what they have said, and I'll educate myself to what you've heard before I pass judgment on that. But even if, let's say there's this level of highness, as you're calling it, if a child has epilepsy, John, I don't give a damn, you know? I mean, if it solves their problem and they get a little bit high and they don't have seizures, then so be it.
I don't say that I disagree with you one bit. There are cases that my wife sees every day in her office or every week in her office that where there is mutilation and they beat on themselves and they have these really tremendous seizures. That there is a place, I believe, for experimental drug and whatever that's made out of. I'm not going to get into that right now, but you know, right now there's a federal law that says we can't do it.
There you go. That's the part we agree.
The studies are inconclusive, and it's not a thing that I think parents ought to be out there just dosing up whatever they feel is good enough and to make life easier in their house.
No, agreed. But when prescribed by a physician, because it's a medicine that helps a child here, then I'm going to be on the side of helping the child as long as the research is solid. And here in Alabama and out of UAB, to me, right now, until shown otherwise, it looks pretty solid. I got to go to the news break, but I have
yeah,
one
no,
last. I got a question for you though. Before you go, do we have a president now at the city council?
We do not, and it is my opinion that we have not missed a single beat in 6 months, and that just says to me that maybe we don't need one. This organization's working well. This city's running well. It's a good time to be in Mobile, Alabama.
There we go. We'll talk soon. I want to hear more about that. Council will be meeting tomorrow. Councilman John Williams. All right. Coming right back to the phones at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, later this hour today, last day of net neutrality. How you feeling? Get a little conversation I had with FCC Chairman Ajit Pai about that coming up as well. Y'all stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 127 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Grab some calls here, a bunch of text in as well. Let's go first to Mike in Baldwin County. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Sean. I was listening to the commissioner, and I hear it sometimes on the radio as well. What's the difference between federal and state law? Because I hear sometimes they'll say federal law trumps state, and mm-hmm. sometimes they'll say state law trumps whatever at this time. You know, I'm kind of confused when they start saying stuff like that.
Well, the other one I have not heard because the – if you say the things the states can rule on or make decisions are those things that are left to the states, right? Those things that the federal government leaves to the states. Then you have in a situation where you have two different rulings. You have the federal law says one thing and the state law says something else. Generally, almost all the time, it is the supremacy clause, Article 6, Clause 2, the supremacy clause that says, I can look it up, but it says the feds win. Okay, here it is. Hold on. It establishes that the Constitution.
That, it almost sounds like really state law has a state law until the federal government says, no, we will trump over you on this issue.
Okay.
And in that sense, it really sounds like state law is really not a real deal, in my opinion. If federal can come in and override.
Sure, sure. It depends on what. Okay, so 10th Amendment, right? So when we always say, oh, that's a 10th Amendment issue, that is saying that, what is not withheld by the federal government is given to the states, right? That mm-hmm. if they did not say that this is the decision-making, this is the province of the federal government, then the state should get to decide. That 10th Amendment issues have been contentious over time in what the feds actually have control of. But when you get in something like the federal law and the CSA, Controlled Substances Act of 1970, you do have some precedent set for the feds making the ruling on what's legal on drugs. And because of that, you have a situation where the states are obviously bucking the Supremacy Clause. And I've asked from back during the Obama administration until now, I've been asking, how is this possible? How is it possible that a state can openly break the federal law and the feds don't go in and shut it down? Now, there's part of this in that CSA of 1970 called a preemption, I think it's a preemption clause, that basically because the feds didn't want to sign on to have to enforce drug law in the states, they realized how much that would cost. They put this little one paragraph clause in here that says, well, it's kind of the state's business too, because they wanted the states to spend the money to make the drug arrest. You know, unless it's interstate or it's coming from international, it's usually not what DEA does, right? They leave it to the sheriffs and ABI and, you know, all those groups, municipal law enforcement. And they don't, the feds don't want to be on for housing all those people. Think about all the jail people in jail because of drug laws. They don't want to be in the business of having to pay for that. So they had this preemption clause, which is a little bit of the chink in the armor here that may be used by Congress to try to decriminalize marijuana. But then my question is, if they do that for marijuana, why not other drugs? I mean, it's categorized as a Schedule I drug, so what? Appreciate the call, Mike. I got to run to the break. We'll be right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
It's summer, and you find radio station contests everywhere. But summer, better than others. With other contests, your competition could be in Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Montana, or even California.
California!
That's right, California. FM Talk 106.5 contests are just like our programs, local. In the Summer Better Than Others contest, register each week at a different partner business for your chance to win a $50 qualifying prize and a chance at the grand prize showcase, including a Reactor Valkyrie stainless steel men's watch from the Carrot Patch Jewelers, Adirondack chairs and table from Old Time Fee. Go for the gold with the best chicken tenders for you and your friends at Goldfingers. An inshore fishing charter from Charlie Gray and Gray Gulf Charters. A two-week four-seat cart rental from the Cart Doctor. And a Liberty Fat Boy Junior Safe from Mike Ward's Liberty Safes. A grand prize showcase valued at nearly $5,500. Details at FMTalk1065.com and on our Facebook. Local business, local winners. From your local hometown radio station. The Summer Better Than Others contest from FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we're back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, Monday style. By the way, coming up Saturday, the 16th annual Mystic Striper Society Fishing Rodeo. $25 donation per ticket goes to St. Jude's charity. What a great thing. Those stripers have a great party. And also a great fishing tournament and great charity involved as well. Let's do this. You can get, by the way, you can get your tickets by going to the Facebook page for the Mystic Stripers. Just look for Mystic Stripers Society or Mystic Stripers Society Fishing Rodeo. Same thing for the website for Mystic Stripers. You can get your tickets there. But you can also get your tickets right now being caller number 6 at 343-0106, 343-0106. Got a pair of tickets so you and a friend can fish the 16th annual Mystic Striper Society Fish and Rodeo. Caller number 6, the tickets are yours. Phone number, once again, 343-0106. So good luck. All right. Also following a story that has been going on now for the last probably 45 minutes or so. And our news partners at Channel 5 say SWAT units with Mobile Police have responded to the Pepper Tree Apartments in Theodore for an ongoing domestic situation. Police have been at the scene since about 10 this morning. They say a man is refusing to come out of his apartment. Police say the man's 3-year-old daughter is inside the home, but police are not considering this a hostage situation, even though SWAT has been deployed. They call it a standoff here in Theodore. So we'll keep our eyes on that story and let you know more when we get it here, but a SWAT is present there. Okay, also today, net neutrality, it's a thing of the past. So what does this mean? Net neutrality's old rules are now not the rules, and the new set of rules that the FCC put into effect back in December went into effect today, ending previous consumer protections that prevented internet service providers from blocking or slowing legal traffic or charging for faster delivery of some content. I could wax poetic on this, but I could just as easily go back to an interview I did a couple months ago with chairman of the FCC, the guy that is, you know, over all this, and he, along with the commission, making decisions on all kind of things in communications, but specifically here in net neutrality and the rollback of the rules. And my conversation with Ajit Pai from a couple months ago, I took about 7 minutes here from that conversation where we talked about net neutrality, and we'll roll that right now.
I want to talk about another, as we talk about access to broadband. Of course, that brings up the big discussion, and watched your speeches. I watched the hearings and the votes here on the change here of the net neutrality laws. Can you, in a layman's terms here, lay out for us what the situation was before this vote and what it is now?
Yeah, so net neutrality involves the basic question of whether you want the government to regulate the internet. And back in 2015, the previous administration decided that it wanted to regulate the internet like a slow-moving utility. It adapted rules that were developed in 1934 for Ma Bell, the telephone monopoly, and slapped them on this new internet that we've got. And a part of the problem I had with that was, number one, nothing about the internet was broken in 2015. We didn't have we had a free and open internet starting in 1996 until 2015. We had a light touch market-based approach that was serving us well. And secondly, that these heavy-handed rules, I feared, and that proved to be true, were slowing down investment in rural areas in particular. As it is, as we talked about earlier, the business case for building out broadband in rural areas is hard. These heavy-handed regulations made it even harder. And so, in our view at least, the better approach was to return to the Clinton-era framework that served us so well, you know, keeping the government out of micromanaging the internet and stepping in only when there's any competitive conduct from a particular company. I think that's the better way to preserve a free and open internet and to maximize the incentives for companies to invest in infrastructure, especially in rural areas.
And going back to the history books again on this one, because those that have argued for keeping those rules in have almost made it sound like a trade buster, right? They were going back to vertical integration or something, and that now that's going to be, it's the days of the Carnegies again.
Right. No, there's been a lot of hyperbole around this issue, and what people on that side failed to recognize, or at least to say, is that we had a free and open internet before these regulations. From 1996 until 2015, companies like Amazon and Facebook and Netflix and Google all grew from small startups into globally known powerhouses. They didn't need these heavy-handed regulations to succeed. To the contrary, this market-based approach is what allowed them to succeed. And so we want to make sure that the next generation of startups and, you know, the future of the infrastructure that we've got in this country continues to thrive. And the best way to do that, we think, based on the history and the common sense economics, is to get the government out of the equation when it comes to micromanaging the internet and return to the framework that we had before.
And doesn't that boil down to, you say, the infrastructure? So let's talk about that. Who actually owns the infrastructure? The idea of, I should be given just as much right to have, you know, this website streamed down this, because while it's another company, maybe a competitor, they don't truly own the infrastructure. When people say that, what's your take on that?
Well, I think the United States has historically made the decision that we have limited capital when it comes to the federal government. The government isn't building and owning all of these networks. Instead, we rely on the private sector to do the lion's share of that work. And that has been approximately several trillion dollars of investment that have taken place over the last 20 years before these regulations were adopted. And to us, at least, the best way to ensure that that infrastructure investment continues is to, you know, create market-based incentives for companies to continue to build out, especially in rural areas, and, you know, take targeted action against any companies that behave in any competitive way. That's what the Federal Trade Commission did for almost two decades. And so if there is some startup or other content developer that's being discriminated against, we want the Federal Trade Commission to take a look at that. But the last thing you want is to regulate everything as if it were a slow-moving utility, because then you're going to get the internet that is more like the Department of Motor Vehicles or Amtrak or the Post Office, instead of the bullet trains that we want it to be.
What do you say there on outside of the business side of it, where the FTC and the FCC acting here as referees, we would say, in the marketplace, to people talking about content. So let's go from the business side. Let's go from, but the content. You mentioned when you talked about startups like the startup Facebook, it's also kind of weird to say. Remember, it's not too far along that was a little startup. But people are worried now more than ever about the content, whether it be some idea of being tracked online, having their data mined, having their data just stolen and used, or getting fake news. I mean, this is what they talk about in Congress.
Exactly. And this is especially the reason why I think the Federal Trade Commission is the best agency to look at all of these issues. The FCC does not have jurisdiction over companies like Facebook or Google. Only the Federal Trade Commission does. And so by making our decision, we once again empower the Federal Trade Commission to apply a consistent set of regulations when it comes to privacy, for example, over every company, whether it's Comcast and AT&T or Facebook and Google. They can say, this is what we expect when it comes to privacy, and apply it evenly. And I think that's a better way to protect consumers going forward.
So the idea would be almost like a posting or something that requires a certain level that you think the FTC might implement?
Yeah, so that's one of the things they are thinking about is how to think about privacy in the online world that we have now. Should consumers have to opt in for any kind of sensitive consumer information that they share with a website or with an internet service provider? Or is opt-out the better way to go? You have to affirmatively make a decision not to share that information. And so that's one of the things that they and Congress are going to be wrestling with. But again, because the FTC has jurisdiction over every company that is involved in the internet, unlike the FCC, I think they are better positioned to make that decision.
All right. While we're on the subject, and if you're just joining us, talking to FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, talking about net neutrality, and now there's, in the last week or so, I got to tell you, I know you've probably seen it well before me, groups out there that are accusing the FCC of dragging feet here on implementations of what happened back in December. Kind of explain, they're saying that that you're dragging your feet to try to give these big companies time to get ready. I don't fully understand it, Chairman. Explain what they're alleging and explain to me why they're wrong.
It sometimes makes me laugh how these special interests in Washington are so keen on ginning up political controversy that they absolutely have no compunction about making up the facts. So it is tried and true law, and it has been for decades, that the FCC, when it makes a decision, essentially has to get approval of the regulations that it's adopting from the White House's Office of Management and Budget. Once we get that approval, then we publish it in a publication known as the Federal Register, and then we announce what the effective date of those regulations is going to be. That's the way it's always worked, and that's the way it works in this case. And in this case, we're still waiting to get approval from the Office of Management and Budget. We don't have any say over that. They don't answer to us, needless to say. That's pretty much the reason why we are in the time frame that we're in. And so I think, I would urge folks to tune out some of the more politically inspired propaganda and just focus on the mundane facts here. And the facts are that we're following the tried and true process that the law requires.
There it is. So conversation from a couple months ago, but obviously pertinent to today with the end of net neutrality. So we'll get some comments on that when we get back at 343-0106, 343-0106. And just in time for you to be afraid of some more things, Centers for Disease Control comes out with their bacteria that are chlorine resistant and may be present in the pool you're going to take a swim in this weekend. Yep. That's on the way. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Oh, by the way, congratulations, Leanna. She just won that pair of tickets to this weekend's Striper Society Fish and Rodeo. More of those to be given away this week, so stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
153 FM Talk 106.5. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way in just a little bit. I am not going to get invited to any kind of Christmas parties anymore in the Mobile media circles after I questioned the story this morning where they misspelled ain't, the apostrophe between the A and the I and not the N and the T. And then I'm reading Bay Bears tonight, Mobile Bay Bears, as they got their Every Monday Matters promotion offering free tickets to tonight's game with the, as it reads, the Jackson General at Hank Aaron Stadium. Now,
Is it just the is it the general, like the auto insurance? I thought it was the generals. I thought it was plural. I could be wrong. I mean, minor league baseball is not my forte. So, but I always thought I would call it the Jackson Generals. Like there were. Now, it would be strange, though. I mean, you have a bunch of generals in one place, but...
Yeah, no, you're correct. It's plural.
So it's the Jackson General, not the Jackson generals.
Right. Generally, though.
Generally.
It's just the Jackson generals.
Okay, so it says... But it says the Jackson General, but...
Right. It'd be like if the Jackson General was playing the Mobile Bay Bear.
The Bay... Let's start doing that in sports. Make everything singular.
But, I mean, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, that could already singular. Be singular.
Yeah, but no, but shrimp, if I have, hey, hand me a shrimp, or I've got 50 pounds of shrimp, it's the same either way.
Both.
You're not sure,
right?
It could be, if you're just looking at it and don't see it in context, you wouldn't know if it was singular or plural. But now, general versus generals, you add the S.
Now, and this is a sore subject, but Dale Jackson was bringing up trying to name, you know, the future Bay Bears once they move to Madison, and I guess they'll be the North Alabama blank.
He said Moon Man.
A Moon Man. Okay, see,
which bothers me because I think it should be the Moon Men.
Right. I thought he was saying Moon Men, but maybe
he said Moon Man, which is stupid.
Maybe that's a new Southern League thing. They're moving all of their names to singular.
So y'all do that. Do that little exercise. Find different ball clubs of any sort and make their names singular.
I did go this weekend to see the Mobile Bay Bear play, and it was a great game with them.
Who were they playing?
The Jackson General.
So they were playing.
And there were a lot of home runs. And it was a great game. The one I went to actually went into extra innings. So, fun time.
That's tough for just one general and one Bay Bear.
Lots of baseball was played between those two guys.
It's just singular. All right. The general is busy out there tonight. But, yeah, it's if you bring your two non-perishable food items, two gently used clothing items, and two books, you'll get a free ticket or two books. So, you can do the two cans of food, the two gently used clothing items, or two books. Get a free ticket to tonight's game. Every money matters. Benefits Feeding the Gulf Coast, Goodwill, Easter Seals, and the Mobile Public Library. Gates open tonight at 6 o'clock. First pitch, 6:35. Good for the Bay Bear. Well done. All right, I mentioned this before we close out, so you can fear the swimming pool, right, when you get into it. So CDC now is saying that there are strains of bacteria that we used to think, what do? You kill bacteria. You put chlorine in the pool, right? That's why you're... hair would turn green in the summertime swimming. You spent too much time in the pool. You'd have, you know, smell like chlorine until you took a shower, right? Well, now they're saying there are strains of bacteria that the chlorine's not killing. They said, let's see, CDC warning, some infectious bacteria are resistant to chlorine. You know, it's just like anything. You use it for long enough, right? We were talking about that earlier. I mean, if you use your glyphosate, if you use your Roundup incorrectly, the weeds will get immune to it as well. According to the CDC report released on Thursday, chlorine does not always do the trick. They said chlorine added to a swimming pool does a pretty good job of killing most bacteria, but there are some parasites that survive chlorine. CDC study says most outbreaks occur at hotel pools. Lord knows if you've seen the video of the woman shaving her legs in the pool. That kind of... But they said, yes. So CDC saying just because there's chlorine in the pool doesn't mean it's killed all the possible bacteria in there. And it does say things like they are warning people that babies not wearing appropriate diapers. Really, we're doing this? Appropriate diapers could lead to bacteria in the pool. So there you go. Just because it's got chlorine in it. You know, next thing you're going to do is tell us that the putting something in the microwave doesn't kill everything either. I mean, something doesn't look exactly right. You put it in the microwave, right? So it's going to be fine. The radiation will kill anything there, and you eat it, and you'll be fine. I mean, if something falls on the floor, you put it in the microwave, right? I don't know, because now the chlorine doesn't kill the nasties in the pool. All right, reminder, some are better than others. Big giveaway with FM Talk 106.5. $5,500 worth of prizes in this giveaway. Get started in earnest this week. Details on our Facebook page, our website, Instagram, on Twitter. You can see all the great items. And plus, you're going to have many chances to win the weekly prize, $50 from each of our participating sponsors. See who those people are, how to get lined up to win. Those details on our, like I said, social media platforms and our website. Check it out and start getting registered this week. More details on that tomorrow when we'll be back in for Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 106.5. For Dalton Norwig, I'm Sean Sullivan. Y'all have a great one.